Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello, these are the voyages of the Starship Filibuster. Its continuing mission to explore strange new films, to seek out new television programs and new pop culture, to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. On today's episodes, we engage in some discussion about the first few episodes of Amazon Prime's Picard series. I'm Dallas King, and joining me for a cup of tea, Earl Grey, decaffeinated, hot, is the Wesley Crusher to my Picard. It's Lee Hutchison. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Let's punch it.
Absolutely. So Picard is set at the end of the 24th century and 14 years after his retirement from Starfleet. Jean-Luc Picard is living a quiet life on his vineyard, Chateau Picard, when he is sought out by a mysterious young woman called Dage in need of his help. He soon realises, however, that she may have some personal connections to his own past. Now, before we dive in, I want to take us back quickly to revisit episode 129 of Filibuster, which we recorded way back on the end of August 2018, and that's where we discussed the news of the show, and then we also decided to sort of take a punt at what the story might be. Now, I had a punt based on the idea of, given that Patrick Stewart's in this, and Logan had just come out, I did my old man Picard thing, and so I thought that the show would be living on Earth after being dishonorably discharged due to being responsible for an accident which was responsible for the death of many members of the Enterprise. He is retired and sipping tea Earl Grey hot in his vineyard when Wesley Crusher returns with a young girl who's apparently the last link to the Borg, and she must be transported across the galaxy in order to save the Federation. I got pretty close, didn't I?
I think you're pretty spot on there so far.
Yeah, no, I mean, Wesley Crusher, I mean, as far as I'm aware, is not in the show yet. I mean, we might get a surprise cameo, but I was basically going on that one. Now, Lee, you pulled me up on this and said that apparently the Borg had been destroyed in another one of the series, so therefore there was no way that that was going to happen. But we'll come on to that in a bit, I guess. But you were hoping for, given the fact that Picard, you know, to explain the fact that it's 20 years later and Picard looks 20 years older, due to your vast knowledge of the timelines in Star Trek, that you were hoping that it might explore the destruction of the Romulan Empire, and I think it's safe to say that that is pretty accurate, wouldn't you?
I think that was pretty spot on, I must say.
Yeah, no, I think we've actually done pretty good. It's actually, listening back to it, I was actually surprised. Oh, actually, that's not too bad. We could have written this show. Now, Lee, I want to come to you first, because you were very lucky enough to win tickets to the premiere of Picard in London, and also managed to then blag your way into getting red carpet access. Now, at the time, you said on Twitter that as a fan, this was a dream come true. Can you tell us what that was like and what it meant to you to be there for that event?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I had, like, Amazon had this competition where you could win up to 80 pairs of tickets for the premiere. It was going to be at the Odeon Luxe in Leicester Square, which is kind of synonymous with the big premieres of Star Wars, London Film Festival, opening and closing nights, you name it. And I just had really good vibes that I was gonna win a pair of tickets. So and I did. So I got into the room. And then things kind of came together and I was able to sort of get press access. So I was able to kind of cover a red carpet event, so which I've done before, but to do one for sort of a Star Trek premiere was quite surreal. I mean, for me, it kind of goes back to, and you know, you're a kid of the 80s and 90s as well, Dallas. I mean, I've been a Star Trek fan nearly all my entire life, and Star Trek has always been sort of that uncool kid. You know, it's maybe not got the attention that some of its bigger star franchises have got. You know, you think of Star Wars, and every kid at school loved that, and you know, had the toys, and you know, it was a cool thing to go see Star Wars, where Star Trek was kind of just that geeky, nerdy thing that probably your dad liked. And it kind of seems in the past few years, sort of since the 2009 J.J. Abrams reboot and kind of continuing on from there and sort of growing and growing, the Star Trek's becoming you know, known again. People are watching it that weren't just the Star Trek fans that watched it in the old days. You know, people like my girlfriend is wanting to watch it. You can buy Star Trek books, are all coming back. It seems like Star Trek's there again. We've got new shows this year. We've got new shows on the horizon. It's so exciting to be a Star Trek fan again and to be part of that. Like, I wish I could go back and tell my younger self, like, oh, by the way, you're going to get a chance to interview, like, these Star Trek actors and talent on the red carpet. You know, I've interviewed Star Trek people in this show before. I've been lucky enough to interview them at Red Star Trek conventions, etc. But to get the chance to do a red carpet event was truly special.
So yeah, it sounds like an amazing night and a sort of dream come true. And you know, I've seen you sort of on the red carpets at London Film Festival, and you always sort of manages to get the people across and sort of ask the right questions. So I can imagine that, you know, you were very professional on the red carpet, but I can imagine that the inner geek inside you was just sort of jumping with joy at that. And I saw the look on your face when you got your photo taken next to the giant sort of Picard letters on the red carpet. So it was great to see. And you can sort of hear the sort of enthusiasm you have for Trek. And of course, you can listen to Lee and all the interviews that he did on the European premiere on a special episode of Filibuster 2 episodes ago, so episode 204. So if you go to thenerdparty.com or subscribe, then you can get it basically downloaded onto your phone ready to listen to. And it's around about sort of 15-20 minute episode, and it's got all the interviews on that. And you know, if you had to pick one person, you know, I don't want to do a Sophie's choice and get you to name favorites. Now I know you didn't get the big dog pea stew, but you know, who is your favorite person to chat to on the red carpet?
It was probably Michael Chabon and Kristen Bayer. They kind of gave about sort of like 8 minutes or so to kind of our little press pen, which was really awesome. And you know, I got to interview some of the new and old stars of the show, but to be able to kind of get such a lot of time with the co-creators of the series and people that have such a passion for Star Trek was really cool. You know, they weren't kind of hurried along by sort of their handlers or anything like that. And that's no disrespect to any of the other cast. You know, it was great what we got with them, but with them it was just like, oh, like it's just going to keep rolling. And then people would ask a question, then I would get a shot, then someone else would ask a question. It was all kind of a wonderful, wonderful moment. I really enjoyed it. The worst one was we did get to interview Harry Treadwell, but he is quite softly spoken, and the booming sound effects that were playing and Alex Zane droning on in the background sort of put rest to being able to use that audio, sadly.
Oh no, it wasn't. It was one of those red carpets, was it? It was the Alex Zane red carpet rather than the. So Lee, as the Trekkie of the crew, I'm going to come to you first. So what were your initial sort of thoughts and expectations and hopes sort of going in to sort of the Odeon Lux and seeing the first episode on the big screen, and sort of, did it live up to the hype and whatever? And are you excited to see where this series is going to go?
Yeah, I'm kind of lucky. I mean, as a time of recording, where the two episodes are out, I've been lucky enough to see 3 episodes so far. I've really, really enjoyed it, and I've been really impressed with it so far. Feels like the first 3 episodes, and I don't think that's a spoiler if you've only seen the first two, is that it feels like that's us getting everything kind of put into place. I know there was talk that there was 2 episodes, then it kind of got extended out to 3 episodes, and I think there is some pacing issues perhaps with the third one a little bit, but ultimately the first 2 episodes have been an absolute pleasure and joy. The one thing that I think Star Trek has done really well, and I suppose this might touch on a little bit of spoilers but hopefully not much, is that it's not making the same mistakes that Star Wars really has kind of done in the past, where Star Trek this is a continuation of Star Trek The Next Generation. We are seeing some familiar characters in maybe some unfamiliar settings. We are seeing little throwbacks, little nods, but it's that. It feels like it takes what happened with Star Trek Next Generation and we go, right, here we go, let's go 20 years later and let's see how things will be different. You know, take away sort of what we kind of know and expect of a series involving Captain Picard and company and do something really unique and interesting. And I've really, really enjoyed that. Feels like kind of Star Trek prestige TV, We haven't really gone into space yet as such on our kind of journey, but it feels like they're doing something new, something exciting, and I'm just really happy with it. It's not... I was worried with Dash that it would kind of do this whole thing of, like, what we've got with Rey of, like, who's this mysterious girl? What's her origins? What's her past? And that's kind of largely addressed by the end of episode one, which was a huge sigh of relief for me, as I just couldn't bear any more of this kind of conversations that have dominated for years now, talking about Rey. You know, the fact that they sort of addressed that within the first episode. Yes, there's still some things to touch on, but I was really glad that Star Wars seems to have kind of been a lesson point for the show's creators and writers.
Absolutely. I think you're sort of spot on there. I mean, we'll go into slight spoiler territory in a bit where we can sort of talk about certain plot points and then maybe sort of speculate as to where the series is going to go. But for me, certainly, as someone who is not au fait with the whole sort of canon of Star Trek, I was sort of coming into this sort of having watched Next Generation years ago, sort of had seen some of the films, but I think it did a really sort of good job of sort of setting up. I mean, Picard is Picard, so I know the character, and you can see they've got this, they sort of explain where he is, why he's there, and it all sort of fits in with the character. This is the Picard we all know and love. He's not suddenly become this different person, so that's really good. And what was interesting for me is, you know, I was worried, am I going to get hooked in with the series and stuff like that, you know, as a non-Trekkie fan? But I know that on the episode where we discussed, you know, Star Trek and all that, I said, you know, I'm not the person to come to talk about that. If you wanted to do a 3-hour episode on Blade Runner, I'm your man, and I'd be able to do that. And I have to say that there was elements of this story where I was suddenly like, oh, hang on, this is getting a bit Blade Runner-y. I kind of like it, and I'm now completely hooked, and I want to see where it's going to go. You know, so in terms of sort of Patrick Stewart sort of slipping back into the role, do you think he's... has he missed a step? Has he lost a step? Or is he just exactly who you want him to be at this point?
I think the good thing is he has lost a little step. I mean, there's a great scene in sort of that first episode where he's like, you know, I'm an old man, as kind of Dash is dragging him up the stairs and so on. And, like, that's what I think's worked so well about it, is that this is an older man, an older character. And, you know, in terms of, say, like, the Han Solo character, I know I keep coming back to Star Wars, but that feels like the point of reference for this, of where it can go well, can go wrong. Like, I thought Han Solo was one of the best things about Force Awakens, but it's like, yeah, he's still being a rogue, and he's kind of kicking around with Chewbacca. Yes, things have gone on in sort of the interim period, but we've not really seen that. We're kind of in the present day, and it's all kind of, he's still the lovable rogue, etc. And, you know, that was kind of interesting enough. But then, I know I touched on it, I didn't like The Last Jedi, but I really liked that Luke Skywalker had, you felt like this is a person that has, time has, you know, evolved, and he has changed from the character he was 30 years ago in The Last Jedi. And I get that impression with Picard. He's still got the same values that we would expect in Jean-Luc Picard, but it feels like it's an older actor, it's an older character. You can't have him do all the things that you did 30 years ago. And I think that makes for more interesting TV. It really plays to people's strengths. I mean, I think anyone that saw Logan probably would get the inspiration of thinking, I would love to see him in kind of Picard mode. And I think that was what kind of worked for the kind of creative team that wanted to put this show together. And I think they saw something in Logan that they went, oh, let's go further with that. Let's kind of take Patrick Stewart and then kind of bring him back in a Picard character and do something unique and interesting. And they most certainly have. You know, you just couldn't do him back in a spacesuit again.
Absolutely. And because when we were talking about this old man Picard sort of storyline that we had pitched ourselves, you know, I'd said he'd been dishonorably discharged after being responsible for an accident that caused the death of the crews of the Enterprise, whereas in this one he has left Starfleet because in the eyes of many people he was deemed responsible for, you know, the deaths of millions of Romulans for his part in a failed evacuation of the planet. And so I think it sort of ties up, and it's interesting that he is still the same, he's got still the same values and whatever, but whereas, you know, rather than him changing, it's Starfleet, he says in this sort of television interview, he left Starfleet because it was no longer Starfleet, it wasn't the system that he knew and loved. And I think in some aspects you can sort of draw parallels with the Luke Skywalker sort of character, in that he sort of abandoned, like, he tried to take the Jedi's where they needed to go, but has realized that, you know, he couldn't do that, so he's left and whatever. And I think what you're saying about Han Solo is quite an interesting point of view, whereas I like the way that in this show they've stuck with Picard being the main character. You can imagine that if they were wanting to almost reboot Star Trek the same way they'd done with Star Wars, they could have maybe had Daj and that being the lead characters who then meet Picard along the way and sort of bring him in that way. But I like the fact that he's sort of front and center on this, and it's really sort of his mission, his way, finding his way back into that role of getting into outer space and becoming, reclaiming maybe some of the sort of respect and stuff that he may have lost along the way, perhaps.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just really interesting. It feels like prestige television, you know. Discovery, which is kind of, will be back for its third season soon. I thought the first season was really good. Second, I have really mixed feelings on. I'm looking forward to the third. But that's, you know, it's a fun adventure show. It's got its drama. But Picard feels like prestige TV. It feels like, oh my god, this is kind of Star Trek with, like, it takes itself really quite seriously, and it feels like it's got a budget. It's got real. It's really investing in sort of this show as a terms of quality. I mean, I think the best series is Deep Space Nine by some distance. You know, so I'm not disparaging that as writing, but with Picard, you feel like, wow, they've really invested in this, and like this feels like something that wouldn't look amiss on perhaps something like HBO, whether it's the opening credits, the acting, the budget, the set design, the costumes. You know, there's been no expense spared here at all. This isn't the cheap kind of Star Trek that we kind of know and love to an extent.
Yeah, and I think with Netflix and Amazon Prime, they seem to have the almost this bottomless pit of money, but they will not scrimp, like you said. There's like John Hammond and Jurassic Park spared no expense, and yeah, it does. Every episode is got the sort of movie film quality of production design, cinematography and everything like that. And because now the lines between cinema and television are blurring so much with this streaming and everything being called content rather than television program or film, I think, yeah, you have to really sort of raise the bar and raise the game and be on a level playing field with these things. And the production design has been fantastic so far. And I'm keen to see, certainly I've just got to the end of episode two because I wasn't lucky enough to get the screener, so I'm just going to have to wait every Friday to play it out. So we haven't got into space yet. It's coming. But, you know, I'm excited to see where that goes. And do you think a show like this is going to benefit from returning to the sort of weekly episode drop as opposed to being able to binge it and get through all 10 episodes of Picard in one day? Would you have liked to have done that? Or are you happy that you're getting the sort of staggered release where people can then talk and theorise for a week before the next episode comes out?
Hell yeah, I would. I would love if I had all 10 episodes right now. And I remembered I got episodes 2 and 3 to watch. And the email came through maybe about 9:30 at night, 10 o'clock. And I would have watched them there and then. But my girlfriend was like, you're not watching them now and stuff like that. And that was kind of put to rest. But I got up at like 6 o'clock the next day to watch both of them before I would go to work. And I just absolutely devoured them down and got to reflect on them afterwards. But I think what's so good, if you are a Star Trek fan like me, maybe it's different for others, is that you get to sort of take it in. You get to enjoy weekly podcasts that are discussing the kind of the TV show. TrekCore, which is one of my favorite online resources, do great reviews, kind of breakdowns of it. It's a lot of the things that is real exciting and takes you back to what it was like being a Star Trek fan when the shows were all on. Like, you would go into the message boards and debate and break down the episodes. And I think that's really the kind of the best way. That's kind of Star Trek's natural home. If I could devour them all in 10 episodes, I would, and that would be fine enough for me. But I think it's an absolute treat, and it's kind of part of that fandom that I love about being able to kind of watch it week to week. But, you know, it might be different for other fans like you or your other self that might go, you know, I'll watch this over a weekend, or maybe it's something that we get lost in. Or like, I got 3 episodes in, but I'm not going to get the time to watch 7 episodes. So, you know, it certainly has its benefits in terms of who it appeals to.
You know, I'm kind of sort of enjoying this sort of renaissance of the weekly serial episodes. I mean, with The Mandalorian was the same. It sort of dropped week on week, and that one was slightly more episodic in that there was almost a different mission every week, whereas this one is a clear story arc to it, but I am enjoying the fact that, you know, you can just get a bit of a breather and sort of imagine where the story's going to go and then see if your imagination ties up with her imagination as well. But I can imagine a show like this is, you know, it's totally accessible for me as a non-fan, but I expect, and you can now tell me if I'm right, but there's probably Easter eggs and stuff in the background that are, or characters mentioned that link to other shows and timelines in the history. Has there been a lot of that so far? Is it sort of catering to that crowd, or is it trying to sort of forge its own path separate to what's come before?
Both. I think, like, yeah, like, there's so much there that I get and I see. And I think the joy of the weekly thing is there's people that are picking up little things as it goes. You know, things, for example, like there's the shot in the second episode where you see the reflection of Picard in the clock, and then there's the fire, which is a nice, you know, intentional or not, throwback to Star Trek Generations, where Picard's family, his brother and his wife and nephew, died in a fire in Chateau Picard. And there was the line that time is the fire in which we burn. And little things like that you get to pick up on. You, like, the Bruce Maddox thing, like, that is such a deep cut, real deep cut into Star Trek, that when it happened, when we were in the cinema room, like, me and Carlos Miranda, who's guest filled in for you a couple of times before, Dallas, we've done, like, the odd little Star Trek episode together, we were like to each other, like, fucking Bruce Maddox. Like, that probably means absolutely nothing to someone that will get, like, Picard, Data, maybe some of the other elements. Like, that's something where, you know, if you're a member of the Joe Pollock, you might go, okay, that's Bruce Maddox, sounds like an interesting character. For a fan like me, it's like, oh my god, that's Bruce Maddox from season 2, 1988-89, where, like, he tried to get Data disassembled, and, like, there was this whole talk about what would they do if there was all this, you know, an army of Datas, essentially. And, you know, it's a payoff to something that we saw, like, 30 years ago. Like, that blows my mind and gets me absolutely buzzing. For other people, it's a plot point. So I think, like, it has so many little things like that. There's also little winks and nods, little bits of things in the background, and I think they have nailed it in terms of that balance. It's never stuffing the screen or overwhelming. It still feels really good.
Yeah, no, it's great for people. I mean, I can completely follow it, and it never feels, certainly to me as, you know, a casual fan, that it's got that. I'm going to sort of make an analogy, because I just watched Jay and Silent Bob reboot recently, of that sort of, you know, well, who's going to pay to watch a film, you know, about, you know, Kevin Smith and all that. And then they sort of turn to the camera and wink to the audience like, haha, we made a clever reference. Aren't we clever? It doesn't feel like that. It's like, it's great. You can pick up on certain things. You're like, oh, no, I kind of remember that. But, you know, it's not at the hampering of the storyline to casual fans, which is great. But you mentioned something there, and I think it's probably a wise point to now sort of go into sort of, I'm not going to say spoiler territory, because, you know, it's stuff which happens in the first episode, so I think it's kind of fair to talk about. If you're listening to it now and you haven't watched Picard, you know, we're highly recommending it, so pause, go watch it and come back. You know, we're only going to really sort of talk about the sort of first two episodes here, but you were talking there about Bruce Maddox and Data and an army of Datas, essentially, and Data has a cameo in this one and then turns out to be very pivotal to the plot. And this is the bit where I got very excited as a Blade Runner fan, essentially, where there is apparently a whole sort of series of synthetic life forms who have been essentially created from Data's sort of neurons and stuff like that. And, you know, characters like Data have apparently been outlawed due to a fact that some of them went rogue on a mining base in Mars, which sounds exactly the same as why replicants were banned in Blade Runner. So I was like going, woohoo, it's like Blade Runner 2049, I'm really digging this. And I'm interested to sort of get your viewpoint on, what did you make of Brent Spiner coming back as Data and the sort of plot line, which throws you for a very large curveball straight away at the end of episode one. What did you make of that, and then were you excited to see where it was going?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, Brent Spiner, it was one of those great kind of, oh wow, moments in the trailers, and I think they've handled it really well. I mean, Brent Spiner doesn't appear in episode 2, and I think that he will be used very sparingly, which is always a positive as well, because I want it to forge its own path. But I really like this element. I mean, I rewatched an episode recently, another deep dive in, is sort of like Data has this episode called The Offspring, where he makes a daughter. Her name is Lal, and she lives for the episode, and you know, there's a whole bunch of things that goes on. And that was like one of the best Star Trek episodes. And I rewatched that one in light of sort of the past few episodes, and it just ties in so, so well. It just, you know, if you're a huge fan of Star Trek, it's all there. This has been building towards that. You know, there's so many things that can tie into it. And as if you're not a normal fan, it's just something that you can reward yourself extra more of seeking out this random episode of TV from the 90s and getting even more from the Star Trek Picard experience. So I'm really liking the way it's going with Dash. I was very surprised when she blew up and then it's revealed that, oh, there's a twin. And I was like, oh, that's really cool, because, you know, it was just like, we know what's kind of happening. We know her origin. You know, I think there'll be much more still to discover. That I think that's going to be really interesting as well. But I like how we kind of have a really good grounding of what's going to happen, and it's going to be consistent. You know, we have a team of writers, producers that have all worked really hard on this show, and it's not going to be a case of, okay, this is what Dash and her sister are in episode 1, and then in episode 2 there's going to be a different writer director that's going to do something different, and then it's going to be rewritten again in episode 3. So I think it's going to be real interesting to follow the thread of Dash and the synths over the next kind of remaining 8 episodes.
I don't know what you could possibly be referring to by retroactively changing the parentage of a couple of characters in a major science fiction franchise. I don't know who would be stupid enough to do something like that, but I'm glad that also the Data storyline and whatever is keeping in canon with, you know, the main sort of storyline of Star Trek, and it doesn't feel out of place, such as, say, Emperor Palpatine suddenly having a child, because that was never mentioned at any point whatsoever, you know, that kind of thing, which just throws you for a loop and you're like, what, really? I mean, no. So I'm glad that it's keeping in contact with that. And, you know, one of the other big revelations at the end of episode 1 was the fact that the sister, twin sister, is working on a Borg ship alongside a hot Romulan, as I believe he's called. So essentially, this is the Fleabag hot priest character of the series. Would you concur?
I would very much agree. He is a very good-looking man. I went to Joe, my girlfriend, when we were watching it. She's not a Trek fan by any stretch, and she's kind of like, oh, I want to watch this show each week with you. I was like, well, I will watch a version of it on Thursday when it kind of lands in America. But you know what? Me and you can watch an episode of it on the Friday or the Saturday. And I was like, oh, check this guy here, this Romulan. I think he's really good-looking. I think you might like him. And then she looked at me and went, nope. So, you know, maybe I have different tastes in Romulan men than she does.
Yeah, but it's interesting that it's Star Trek is almost becoming sort of self-aware and sort of catching up with modern audiences by the fact that two of the characters even comment on how hot this Romulan is compared to other Romulans in the past. And also with the... Now, I know this got a lot of stick in Discovery, and I'm interested to get your viewpoint on this, but I believe there's been so far 2 F-bombs dropped in Star Trek Picard, and the first one I thought, no, that can't be right. I actually rewound it a couple of times and thought she must have been saying something else. It must have been a Romulan word that sounded like an F-bomb. But then, indeed, there was a definite F-bomb later on in that, and I know this got a lot of stick when it was used in Discovery as not my Star Trek. How do you feel about this sort of modern language sort of being used in the Star Trek universe?
I don't particularly mind it, to be honest, but I can see why people would have an issue with it. Star Trek kind of has always appealed as being a bit more of a family show, but I mean, one of the F-bombs is technically acceptable because it's feckers, which isn't technically a swear word according to the Irish. So, you know, we're kind of down to one, but I love that line. Like, when I watched the episode, I was like, oh my god, this scene is just so intense. And I loved the way someone spoke to Picard like that. And I just think yeah, you could do it without it, but I just thought the impact of that, the sheer effing hubris was just like, oh, I just want to watch that again and again. And just like the intensity in that scene was something else. So no, I don't particularly mind it. You know, Star Trek has used it kind of a bit poorly in the past. Generation, Star Trek Insurrection, for example, I think it was used very well in First Contact, I think they always got away with one swear word a film. But yeah, in Discovery, yeah, they had the odd moments again, but I really didn't mind it. But I can see why people have issues with it. But, you know, I'm not going to really kick up a fuss either way about it.
Absolutely. So sort of looking forward onto the rest of the series. So this is, like you see, you've been saying that you've seen episode 3 now, and it's sort of building sort of up to the story of where it's going to go. But, you know, there's going to be 10 episodes of this. Do you think it's going to play out well? You know, I know there's a few big name characters still to return. Do you think it's going to be like one an episode coming back? Or do you think it will be more than just a, oh, hi, look, it's 7 and 9, or it's Deanna Troi? But you think there's going to be, it sounds like they are doing it better in Star Wars, and that there's going to be a reason for these characters to come back. It's not just going to be fan service. It's not just going to be, oh, well, we haven't had Lando Calrissian back, so let's just bring him back for the final one because he's the only one who hasn't been back yet. Do you think there's going to be more of an organic storyline to bring these characters back in, and a reason for Picard to see it? Because at one point he does mention that he could essentially get the band back together to go out on this mission. He could get Worf back, he could get Geordi back, but he's not going to do that because he doesn't want them risking his life for him just for this. So do you think there's going to be a more organic reason for the returning characters to pop up?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I when I heard that line in the second episode where it's like, oh, you could ask Riker, Geordi, you know, all along to come help you out. And he's like, oh, I couldn't do that because they would agree to it. And I was like, oh, my God, this is just like an Iron Man 3 when it's like we've had the Avengers, like, and everyone's going to be asking, why not get the Avengers together? Why aren't the Avengers going off and doing this? So I like that little kind of beat. And I think, yeah, like we've got Riker and Troi will be coming in. I think it'll just be for perhaps an episode, or maybe just like a cliffhanger and then into one episode. And I think the 7 of 9 reason, from what I've kind of read, I think it's the 4th episode she's due to appear in. I think it's going to be a pretty organic reason when you kind of think of the state of play at the moment with this Borg cube. So yeah, but I don't see her being potentially a regular. I maybe see her being there for sort of a run of episodes, but maybe not as a kind of out and out regular. But you know, they use little characters like Hugh, for example. You know, these are things that they didn't have to use. They could have invented new characters, but it seems like a nice subtle continuation to kind of dip into these characters. So I think the people know what they're doing well, and I'm really excited to see how they use this sandbox of this entire universe. This is the first time we've really dived into the future, apart from the destruction of Romulus in sort of 2009's film, when we sort of saw that glimpse into the 24th century. So they've got a huge canon of Deep Space Nine, Next Generation, Voyager characters, from, you know, little guest stars like Hugh, who only appeared in 2 episodes, to someone like 7 of 9 as a series regular, and, you know, Riker, you know, 7-season regular, 4-star movie character. You know, I'm really excited to see what they use and how they use it, and I think they'll certainly be appropriate with it.
Absolutely. And you know, so this is a limited series, 10 episodes. Do you see it being a complete story arc with being nicely tied up at the end, or the fact that Patrick Stewart has been on The View in America asking Whoopi Goldberg to come back for the second series? Do you see everything sort of being tied up, or do you think you're going to be sort of screaming at your television screen as they leave it on a cliffhanger, knowing that they've got a second season to come and you're going to have to wait about a year to find out what happens?
I think you've nailed it there. There's going to be something about it where, like, oh my God, I can't wait to come back for season 2. So yeah, I'm excited by season 2. I think there's going to be a season 3. I think that'll probably be about it for kind of Star Trek Picard, and you know, I'm happy with that. 3 seasons, 30 episodes of high quality, spending time in that world. I'm really excited to see what they do, where they go, and I think it's such an exciting time to be a Star Trek fan.
Absolutely. And if anyone out there wants to chat with Lee about Picard and find out his thoughts, you know, you can probably catch him on Twitter just after about 8 a.m. every Friday. Once it drops on Amazon Prime, you can try and find out what sort of theories he's got going on. But Star Trek, you know, is not the final frontier on this show, because it's time, as always, for our weekly recommendations, where it could be a film, TV program, magazine, song, or cinema screening that we've enjoyed or want to give a shout out to. So Lee, what have you picked for us this week?
There's a podcast I'm really loving at the moment, and that is the Screen Drafts podcast. I don't know if you're familiar with it, Dallas.
I have, yes. You've recommended it to me a couple of times. I've listened to a couple of episodes. I think the A24 one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's so good. Like, it's the kind of thing we would probably do, but we can't be bothered spending about 3 hours of doing something like that. But, like, they do some fantastic episodes. They do, like, they've recently just done a Star Trek Super Draft. It's like a 4-hour, 8-minute episode. They've done, like, Laura Dern, Kristen Stewart, Arthouse Cinema, game movies, films of Philip Seymour Hoffman. You know what? It's so interesting to, like, there are people like me and you that are passionate about film, have a deep dive knowledge of filmographies, of different actors, different franchises, etc. And I just really love the enthusiasm that they have for their subject. So I dive into this one quite frequently. There's episodes where I'm like, I have no interest in that subject, but that's okay. And I've really thought it's been a real fantastic one to kind of dive into. So yeah, definitely check out the Screen Drafts podcast with Clay Keller and Ryan Marker. So just search for that on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
That sounds great. And yeah, I'm definitely going to add it to my regular rotation for a week. And for me, I'm going to pick a film which is out in cinemas this Friday and then on Blu-ray on Monday the 10th of February. And it's a film called Daniel Isn't Real. And this is essentially, how can I pitch this? It's Drop Dead Fred meets Fight Club, in that a troubled youth who had an imaginary friend as a kid brings him back to life in order to cope with adult life, and it turns out that Daniel is not always the nicest friend in the world, and gets Daniel to do some crazy and rather outrageous things. And then when he tries to get rid of him, he decides that he isn't going away and decides to take over his body and gets him to commit some heinous things. And the real thing that sort of stands out for this film, it's written and directed by a guy called Adam Egypt Mortimer, and the Daniel star is a guy by the name of Patrick Schwarzenegger. And if the last name sounds familiar, it is indeed Arnold Schwarzenegger's son. He is certainly not as big and muscular as his dad, but he's certainly got the same sort of screen presence, and he is a really exciting actor. I think he's going to do really good things coming up. He's just got a sort of Patrick Bateman, sort of Tyler Durden quality to him. He's unpredictable yet charismatic, and he can easily talk his way into things. And I think it's a real sort of showcase for his talent, and I'm really excited to see what Patrick Schwarzenegger's got coming up next. So that's my recommendation for you. It's a total sort of genre flick. It's sort of produced by the same sort of company that did Mandy, and has got Colour Out of Space coming up soon as well. So I think it's Elijah Wood's sort of horror production company. You know, I didn't think, you know, 20 years ago when the Lord of the Rings films were coming out, that, you know, Frodo would go on to be one of the sort of champions of sort of genre horror cinema that we have today. But yeah, it's an interesting film and highly worth a watch. I expect it'll be on streaming services quite soon as well, because limited cinema release, out on Blu-ray on Monday, and then you'll be able to catch it on streaming quite soon. So will you be putting that one on your recommended playlist?
Yeah, it sounds really good. I've had mixed feelings on Colour Out of Space and Mandy, but yeah, they're always quite interesting and worth the watch. So yeah, count me in for that one.
Yeah, and I mean, if you saw the film poster for it, it's in that sort of blue purple sort of hue that I think they've got a sort of brand going with the sort of poster style. So I think if you see a poster that's got sort of blues and things and looks like a horror film, it's probably a good shout that it's along the lines of Mandy and all that. So, but on next week's show, it's Bong Hive Assemble, because we're finally going to tackle the Golden Globe and BAFTA and potentially Oscar winning by next week film Parasite, directed by Bong Joon-ho, and we're going to discuss the fallout of the Oscars. So we'll see you then. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.